Arjun, he has told us that, see that you don't try to fall a prey to alcohol. Don't become an alcoholic. So that's why some people continue taking a peg or two, and some don't. Some continue to smoke because that has not been stopped. There are certain things, you see. You know the reaction. You know what are the... there is something that is known as the withdrawal symptoms. You have in drugs withdrawal symptoms, huh?
Yeah.
So likewise, you can use that figure also. For ages together, we have been, you may call it, addicted to these things. Why alcohol? There are so many things undesirable that we are addicted to these things. Speaking untruth, thinking evil of others, and all that. So he has tried us. He has tried to bring home to us to curb such activities. Curb taking alcohol, curb thinking maliciously of others, be good to others, be kind and be loving to others and all that. But he has not ordered that you must do it, otherwise you are not mine.
But he ordered that about drugs.
But he ordered about the drugs.
And how would you explain
why this? Did he order about the drugs? Because in his omniscience he knows that it degenerates you totally.
Mind,
physically, spiritually, also the degeneration of spirituality is very necessary. That urge in us to love the beloved is marred by it. But with these things, gradually we will shed them. He knows that. If he were to stop even these things, then akin to withdrawal symptom will come and we will not know what to do. You see, there is this thing like a person, you may have noticed, a person who eats well, say, and he is nourished by the food that he takes. Meat, fish, fowls, everything is fine, he eats that. And suppose if some guru comes and tells him, if he's not perfect or if he has been telling people that it's not good to indulge in all these things, it will be bad for you. And some crazy person immediately stops taking all these things. So it affects the psyche, it affects the physical strength, everything just gets sapped, you see. So instead of concentrating our consciousness upon the reality, upon the righteousness, so our energies are all dissipated in trying to uphold this, that I must not eat meat, I must not eat flesh, I must not drink, I must not do this, I must not do this and all that. We continue to harbor these feelings and we get weaker and weaker and weaker and weaker. All our energies will not be there. He wants us to be happy and cheerful. This is an arena, this is a game that we are playing now. That will all be lost.
Alertness.
All the alertness will be lost. Everything will be lost in it. So there are certain things, if you indulge in that, while indulging in, you make you lose these things. There are other things while indulging in that that uplifts you and makes you go further and further towards him. So he permits that. Till such a time when you are close to him, you automatically get shed. Because you are not degenerate, your psyche is not degenerated, your spirituality is not degenerated, it's there intact, in spite of it. But then you shed it, automatically they get shed. It's like that. It's like, take another example. You're fond of green color. And now suppose if this green color, I don't know anything about colors or anything, or dyes or anything, but there are certain dyes which are poisonous to our system. You like this, no? Green color, therefore you worn it. And you look beautiful in it. We all know it. Now what happens if you were to discard this system and just want to paint your body as you have this sort of thing? You get the whole dye put on your body. What will happen to your body? It will absorb that dye. Dye will penetrate there and it will create harm to your system. Whereas if you wear this, it doesn't create any harm. You look beautiful, you are sustained and all that sort of thing. It's good. You feel happy with it and all that. But then if you were, so these psychedelic drugs are the ones that you come in direct contact with, create such havoc on your system that it is preferable not to go in for it. Instead, we have the other alternatives. If you want to go in for it, other alternatives are there. Like you're wearing the same color dresses, you see. It's like that. Don't allow it to be in direct contact with your spirituality or with your psyche. You see.
But so that has a completely different effect than liquor does.
Yeah.
Because I was trying to explain to someone, and they said, well, they both make you high. And I couldn't really, I didn't know really how to explain it to them.
That high in psychedelic drugs, you see, don't gradually degenerates your mental aptitudes, your spiritual urges and all that. This gives you that high feeling, you see. But then gradually, it just, again, there is an ebb there, it subsides and it keeps you moving about. Unless you become a total alcoholic, you see, and that is also degenerating, which Baba doesn't want you to.
So liquor would be more biological, and say drugs would be more mental, and then affecting the body.
Not only mental, but Baba says it will harm you spiritually also. That is more important. What is needed for your spiritual, so-called spiritual progress, is that you forget yourself. Psychedelic helps you to forget yourself. Alcohol helps you to forget yourself. It's good. Both are good. But what happens is that when you, in the process of forgetting yourself, that is the limited outlook that you get from it. But what happens is that psychedelic drugs act deeply upon your psyche and on your consciousness, and after making you forget yourself, there is another imp that is created in you, and that makes you, keeps you high and makes you think, means gives you paranoia that you are somebody great, you are the master, you are this and that. So there's a downfall in spiritual level, you see. There is no sense, no iota of love being created in you. On the contrary, you say, what love? I am the one. So finish. That's the end of the whole thing. So that's why he says, drop that. Never mind, take this if you want to, but drop that. You see, that doesn't mean that he wants you to take these also. Eventually you have to drop everything. Your food, your breathing, your water and everything, it will be dropped, you see. But the lesser of the evil, he wants you to have it in order to drop that greater evil that is there. You follow?
Yeah.
That's what it is. Understand? Is it clear? Yeah. He doesn't mind you're taking alcohol and all that sort of thing. Not that he doesn't mind at all, but he does mind. Yeah. It distracts you. It detracts you. But then he wants you, unless and until you have a proper control over yourself. But if you go on indulging and get addicted to it and become an alcoholic, finish. That is degenerating too. Even food is degenerating. If you indulge in food, you get that feeling. You know how you, have you ever tried that? I have tried often because I am born gluttony. I know it. Even food is equally poisonous. It is like that. If you don't control the intake, it is like that. Not only spoils your physical health, but it also degenerates spiritually. Food also. Everything within limit is good. Even these drugs, Baba doesn't want you to totally discard them. He says, make use of the drugs as and when you get the prescription from the medical, from the medics. It will help you to straighten out your mind. So when the symptoms are there, then make use of those drugs. But if the symptoms are not there, then don't go in just to get high on them, because that is harmful there. Where is he? 250 ways to become high. He has not come today. Bill?
Bill Blair.
He's not here today.
250 ways?
Ways to become high. That's how he came to Baba, because Baba was the 250th way. He tried all the 249.
Eric, one of the effects of LSD, I remember, is that it made one more conscious of the illusion. Whereas you became more conscious of smells, objects you became more aware of, little things became, and you got wrapped, but you could, of the illusion, not of reality.
Yeah, and then you get attached to that.
And the taste, your senses were heightened. Yeah. Not, so there wasn't a loss, there was a heightening of one's involvement in the illusion.
That's how it is. Mm-hmm. But the worst involvement is you get yourself involved with yourself.
You fall.
And you think, you think false self, and you think that you are somebody great. That's what happened with Larry. Yeah, Larry, what happened? Same thing happened. He considered himself to be God. That's the end of it all. So what's there? That was the downfall. Yeah, you get that feeling of grandeur. Right? So that is the reason why Baba's put a stop to it. Don't take it. Don't indulge it. Through compassion he guided us. Yeah. Otherwise we would have gone astray. Thinking that, well, it gives us greater pleasure. It gives us the feeling of oneness and all that sort of thing. Little knowing that that very feeling of oneness creates a greater separateness. His knowledge of oneness includes all the manynesses, whereas the knowledge of oneness you gain through psychedelic drug excludes you from the manynesses.
Not just, also pot.
Pot. Of course, we, because we love him, so our love prompts us to do anything that he wants us to do. If he tells us that leave off drinking milk, so we do. There are so many who have done it. Don't eat three times a day. Don't eat all the days of of the week. Fast on 2 days. So we do it. Without questioning, we do it. But then the question comes when, as she says, when people ask us. So for them, these are the things. We have nothing to do with that. Whatever Baba tells us, we do it. Because we accept it. It's our love for him that would want to accept anything that he tells us to do it. And that's the best way. But when we come across some people like that who put these questions, and it's rightly put, why? Has he stopped people taking alcohol? No. Why does he allow? Alcohol is also like that. So then all this rigmarole comes into play. Sheila has a beautiful laugh. She's going to laugh like that.
Laugh for ways of heaven.
Like a kookaburra. Kookaburra.
They have a song about the kookaburra. You know it?
You don't sing it?
Not really. I just remember I learned the song about the kookaburra.
Erich, last week you said that that gift of obedience, that obedience of just not using the mind, but just
obeying,
just obeying without question. And I mentioned to you that I don't see how that's possible without heart coming into play. So that leaves with a person with that. Either the heart isn't there, or it's going to be very difficult to obey.
Of course.
So, is it the trying leads to that?
trying doesn't lead to it. Our trying leads to imbibing His grace, and His grace does this job. Our trying, you see, a person who is trying hard and all that, having nothing to do with another person, but we see him struggling and trying. So there comes a day when our heart goes out to that person, trying to give him a helping hand in what he is trying to do. So likewise, it is His grace that one day He descends upon us, and then it becomes possible.
Do you feel that element is there? I mean, even though God is not.
Yeah, it is. Of course, it has nothing to do with His physical presence or anything of the sort. Yeah, that's what He has been all the time telling us. That His physical presence was just to bring home to us all these things that He revealed to us, was bringing home to us these things. But whatever He does, whatever He works upon us, is not because of His physical presence, but because of His presence. This physical presence is needed so that our ears, physical ears, can register, hear Him. And our physical mind, you see, that means why our brain should register these things. You see. That's why it is needed for Him to take a human form and all that. But really speaking, that's not His true state. His true state is His presence, universal presence. He is, He hears us, He sees us. But for us to hear Him, for us to see Him, for us to feel Him, so He has to take that form. Makes it more tangible for us. Because we are steeped in limitations. Only through limitations can we, what is the word you see in English? No, that we can have a rapport. Mm-hmm. Yeah. An interchange takes place. Mm-hmm. His being in our midst is here now, He's here. He is more present to us now. As He has said that at the time when He was physically confined, it's His confinement, as He called it. His taking a human form is His confinement. So, when you were say in New York at the time when He was physically confined here, so you think of Baba only as Baba being at Mehrazad. Now a greater scope is given to us to think of Him wherever one is, to know that He is there. You see, He was that, but He, through His act of compassion, He confined Himself in order to give the message, in order to awaken. And that's what He did. And now He has left His confinement and is now again universal.
So maybe it's that we're so we're so ingrained in dealing with people on
our level.
On our level, the way that we respond to someone that person responds to us. To comprehend something that's invisible, or it's difficult. I mean, it's difficult to imagine that Baba is impersonal.
Because we are so touched. We are so entrenched, you see, with the use of our sight. So that's how it is. So we want something. You therefore say that He's invisible because you have the faculty of seeing. That's why you say invisible. But He says that your seeing was an hindrance, you see, your physical sight. In seeing Me as I really am. You forget the message that He gave when He was invited to the blind home for the blind.
Yeah.
See how He had said that and made them so happy about it. Have you heard that? He went one day to the home of the blind. He was invited there. He went there. And He met each one of the blind and all that. And then he embraced them and all that. And there was a nice music program from them. And everything was beautiful there. They were all happy. But they were sad at the fact that they could not see him physically. It's but naturally. So, it was Baba says, these are not the words to comfort you or you, your blindness. But it's a fact, I say to you, that you all are more blessed, that you have overcome one hurdle, which is your sight, and you have come closer to me, if you remember me. Because when he didn't just say this to humor them, because he gave a real example to them of what the sight does to us. It's so alluring. So seeing things, you see, you get attached to them, you get enamored of things, you see. So then he gave an example to them. So just take the example of these great sages. Why do they leave the world and go out? Why, when they want to concentrate, would want to shut their eyes, you see, and don't want to see anything, you see, so that they can be in tune with the omnipresent, with the presence of the omnipresent. So one hurdle is already passed by you. So take heart to this fact. And I tell you, it's not to humor you. That's what he told them. And when a blind man gets somehow or other attached to Baba, I have seen with my personal eyes his stronger faith, his total reliance upon him are accentuated. Take the case of Hari Kanha. What an example it was. Because that hurdle was not there. No distractions were there. No involvements were there with others, you see. It was one-pointed on his own feelings for him. The vicinity of him. He would feel his presence. So that is helpful. Same thing with all our senses. One after the other, we have to drop our senses. It's the senses that is a hindrance to us.
Can one take that as being true for all handicaps? Physical handicaps?
Provided one has got the awareness of the real handicap that is ourselves, you see. So all my being Eresh is the real handicap, you see. So naturally a portion of Eresh, when it drops, is a great deal of rejoicing, you see. You follow? One must have the awareness. Otherwise, he just is set in his own limitations and he feels handicapped. He feels that he cannot walk about. Suppose if I lose my faculty of walking about, the strength in the legs. Same thing with my hands, with my eyesight, with my hearing. I feel so dejected and all that. I would feel so handicapped because I won't be able to go to Baba. Suppose if Baba was here physically. These handicaps are there when one feels it that way. But when one has got the awareness of the real handicap that one is, one's own, then he thinks that all these things are hold good with all our senses when we drop one after the other. There is one little fine, very touching story on this subject. A nice point that you brought about.
What did Prabhupada ask you after?
So, the story that I'm reminded of is really touching. There are two stories like that. Now, I remember the other one. So, what happened is, the one that I got first in my mind was, okay, you know, when Baba dropped his body in 1969, prior to that, there's a village nearby near Arangam, at a distance of about 12-13 miles from there. So these villagers came to know that Mehr Baba is a great person. Of course, it's very difficult to say these things out, you know, whether they know or not, but at least they know that he is a great person. I myself do not know what he is really in reality, as he wants us to know who he is. In order to know him, one has to become him. That's the fact. So in our degrees, there are variations in our knowing about him. So those who knew about him knew him to be somebody great. So when he dropped his body, they would come to the tomb there where the body lay. So they all came that day. They were there and they paid their reverence and their homage, or whatever you call it, you see, and they were solemn about it, and they felt that they lost him from the midst and all that. It's wonderful. It's but natural for our human selves. It's but natural. Natural reflex. Now what happened in that particular village, there was a woman who was stone blind from her childhood. She had grown into an old woman. She was very old and frail. And she heard all this commotion in the village. Where are you all going? What's happening? She had heard of Baba too at the time, because the village had heard about Baba and about his greatness. So she was handicapped. She didn't know what to do. How is it possible for a frail woman to... Somebody should help her to go there, no? These are the handicaps. We are talking about handicaps now. So it was impossible because she couldn't see, and she's so frail that she had to be piggybacked. Or put in a cart, you know, put in a cart, and then the cart has to take. But nobody had any, sense to take her or include her in that. So each on his own went off when they heard the news. You know how the commotion takes place at such times. So this woman is all by herself, not knowing what to do, and she would want to be there, but handicapped, can't go. So she remains resigned. She's there. And she's all the more thinking about what must be happening, what's transpiring there and all. Now, the psychic faculty helps her. The keenness. All her mental forces, the thoughts are all focused on that. You follow? So that is a sort of a compensation for her physical handicap. So she remains in tune, imagining things naturally. The ordinary human being can imagine things. People come back. And then she says, what happened and all that? And she hears all the news, what happened and how it transpired and how the body was interred and all that stuff. And then she said to them, that will it be possible for you all to take me when you go next to him? He says, sure, we'll remember to take you. Next Amartiti time came. And once again, those who wanted to go there, they completely forgot. All didn't come. Quite a few came. Many of them came. But they completely forgot about this old lady. They came on their own, some on cycles, some on carts and all that sort of thing. Finished, completely forgotten. Again, when they went back, they told about what happened, you see. And she said, but you didn't take... Oh, we've completely forgotten. We'll take you next time when we go. It happened twice like that. First, of course, it was possible. It was forgivable. Twice, it wasn't forgivable. But still, it happened like that. So when they go the third time, that is the second time after the first incident. So she feels so sad about it that she's again left like that. And, well, she bemoans her being handicapped like this and her old age and all that. And she's seated outside the tomb. And something happened. What happened was narrated to me one day after some years. One day I had gone to the tomb for some trust work. And I was seated outside on the parapet of Baba's cabin. You know that cabin, Baba's room, where the parapet there. So I was sitting there. That's my usual seat. And there were some people inside the tomb. There are people who come and go and out and all that. So I was just seated there. and a group came out of the cloud, and they wore their sandals and shoes, and they looked at me, and they came running to me. And one after the other, they embraced me. I got, of course, and embraced. And they come naturally. I didn't know who they were. So they said that we are very happy to see you. I said, who are you people? Who? You have come from Baba. Who are you? I hadn't met you before and all that. They said, do you want to hear our story? I said, yes. So then they tell us what happened that day. So they told me about this. They are from that village, same village. So they tell me what happened to that woman. Now the story is, when she was left there on her own, so she was sitting outside the hut of hers. She didn't have a house or anything, very poor. And she said, when we had left her and we had come over here for second Amarkiti. What had happened was that she was thinking about her handicap and thinking about Baba and all that. And all the time she had thoughts on Baba. So when we came over here, we had forgotten her, although we had promised her. When we went back, we remembered. So we went to apologize to her. And she, with a great smile, said, you need not do that. On the contrary, you have favored me with a greater favor than you are having taken me, than if you had taken me there. He says, how come? What do you say? We don't understand. He says, I saw Baba. Baba came to me. So then they said, what do you mean that he came to you? So then she narrates what had happened to her. They said, I was in a very dejected mood and sat there and pining my lot as to how disabled I am. And all of a sudden, I can't see anything. It's all darkness before my eyes. But all of a sudden, light shone. It was so brilliant. I can't describe the light. I can't describe the brightness. But it was very soothing. It was not something that would disturb me, but I would love to see that light, you see. And I was looking at it, and in that come two figures. So they say that, they think, these people are narrating the story to me. So while they are narrating, they say that, well, we never believed her. We thought that now, because, you know, grapes are sour, so she's making up her own story in order to put us away. So then we tried to question her, and we said, well, what, you saw Baba there? He says, yes, one of them was Baba and another of them was a fat person. And on his arm, he was taking support of the arm and he was walking towards me. So then we questioned her. She says, yeah, it's good that you saw him. And you saw how well he's dressed in the Western dress, because they tried to pull her leg, you know. Try to double check her. That's the right word?
Yeah. To verify the story.
She says, what? She says, he wears Western clothes. That means boots and shoes and socks and coat and pant. No, I didn't see that. Does he wear that? So then how did you see him? What does he wear? He said he had simple white cloak on him, with sort of a long dress. And he had chappals in his feet. No shoes were there. That's what I saw. Oh, then he must have been dressed in a different way. He had a beard, no? He said, no, I didn't see a beard. But it seemed that he didn't have long hair also. But I remember one thing, when he turned back, there was a little braid there. How did he turn back? He was approaching you now. So yes, he came with the support of another person, and he was walking very slowly and limping towards me, and he came towards me and he looked at me, and I felt so happy seeing him and all that. And then he did something like that. So he says, in which language did he speak? They ask immediately. He says, he never spoke anything. He just signed to me like this. So I thought that he wants some food or something like that. So I tried to get up. But that other man, I was uneasy as to what he wants, whether he wants, he's asking me whether I have food or does he want food or anything. So the other man says that Baba is asking whether is there anything in your house to give him some food. Is there any food there in your house? So then I tried to get up, you see. And saying this, while I'm getting up, I see him turn back. And then they go away, and while he turned back, then I saw his braid there. And that's how I know that he didn't have long flowing hair, but he had a braid. Oh, then they realized that what had happened was that he did come to him. And they came and embraced me because they thought that I must have been the person. Yeah. Because they must have seen some films or something like that, you see. And, yeah. So that is the story. That even though one has the handicaps and all that, but those very handicaps can bring him closer to, then makes you come closer to him. Because he visits. He's the one there who recompenses.
There's a second story?
Ah, yeah. The second story is about my cousin, who is absolutely, she is quite different, you see, in her handicaps. And she, she's here still living. But she loved Baba and loves Baba a great deal. And she'd come very often. She'd be brought in a chair, wheelchair, or on a chair. And she'd be lifted in her hands and put near Baba and all that. Even now, she takes her trips to the tomb, you see, nowadays. Nowadays, after that particular incident, she comes to the tomb in the pram. The same pram that Baba gifted her. I don't know whether you've seen the picture of Baba using the pram after his accident.
Yes.
Have you seen it?
Yes.
You know, to rehabilitate him, we used to put a big stone in a pram and would want him to start walking now after the accident. Have you seen that picture?
That's not the wheelchair.
Not the wheelchair. I'm talking about the pram.
Oh,
yeah,
like a baby straw. Like a baby straw?
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. What do you call it?
We call it baby straw.
Baby straw. We call it perambulator. A pram, we call it.
Oh, well, that, yeah.
Yeah, the baby is put on your mother pushes the cart. So, in trying to make him walk after the accident, you know, lying on bed, sometimes your limbs need some rehabilitation afterwards when doctor permits you to walk about. It's not possible for a person to walk immediately after a long stretch of lying in bed. So, that was the way we started making him walk, holding the pram. Like a child, child when he starts walking, you have that little cart, push cart, you know, for the child. So likewise, he also started walking. Yeah. So we used to put a big stone in it to keep the weight there. Otherwise, because he has to take support on that, otherwise he'd fall. So that stone was the ballast. So that's how you push the cart and take one step, another step like that. So when he started walking, that pram had no need of its own. So Baba gave it to her to sit in it and be taken from one place to another. So she uses it now, even now. So prior to that, what had happened, Baba had dropped his body and all that, and people would come for the Amartiti. So naturally, all would want to come in the family. Nobody is there for anybody on such occasions. So there would be some maid servant kept there or somebody there, which is not possible. Her condition is very bad. So first a maid servant was kept there and they all came. But when they heard the story later on, they thought it's not good to leave her like that. So her own sister thought that it's best for her to stay back. Never mind, sacrifice the day, she can go anytime she wants to. It's not necessary that one must go there that day when you have some important work which Baba would want her to attend the sister. So that's why she attended the sister. So they were in the house where my mother lives in Pune. So there's a dining hall there, and they would follow. Then the sister said that we'll follow the same program as the Amartiti. Sprinted. So from 12 to 12:15 we'll keep silence. And we will be in thoughts of Baba and all that. So that particular day when her sister was with her, she sat at the table and she sat on another seat on the near the table there. And they were there. chatting and all that. And all the, it's 12 o'clock now. So she and her sister both are now becoming quiet and silent. And she's shut her eyes, that disabled sister. And just she remained like this. Whereas the other sister was there looking at her and also keeping silence. All of a sudden, she hears the footsteps, the one who is whole, the sister. And somebody is entering the room. And she sees Baba coming in physical form. Yeah. And standing, and she also not only sees Baba, but then he takes a turn and goes to Dhan, that is my disabled cousin. He goes and Baba puts his arm around her shoulder and is standing there. So she doesn't feel the weight, it seems, because she doesn't look askance, what's the matter, or anything to say. Whereas the other sister sees his form and doesn't get the touch of Baba. And she is so stupefied with the sight and being silent that is more that's predominant in her mind, that we have to observe silence, so she can't utter a word. And she is silent there and gazing at the sight. You see that Baba is there, and with great tender love, you know, is there, pouring his love to her. And then, just before the silence is to break, Baba releases her and walks out of the place. He says, 12:15, she could speak out to her. He says, Dhan, did you see Baba? He says, no, but today I felt great pleasure, great joy within myself. What was it? So then the sister narrated the whole episode. So the resultant effect was that one of them could see the figure and the other could feel the great joy. You see?
But later, did she feel it was Roshan that was holding her or something?
No, I don't know.
She didn't even feel
she didn't even feel the weight. Mm-hmm. But she felt that great presence. Yeah, the great presence and the joy of it. So such things are there. So when one is handicapped and one then gradually discards the senses, or you drops the senses, you may call it, and not make use of it on one's own or through physical handicaps, then you can go closer to him. Yeah, because he comes closer to you in under such circumstances. Such are the things.
So that question that I had for you.
Yeah.
I've heard it said secondhand, not for you, but that Baba told you that, well, I mentioned that God forgives everything but hypocrisy.
Yes.
And then Adi, I think, was puzzled by that, thinking that, well, how can anyone be eternally condemned? And then he heard through you, Baba mentioned that that's true, that God does not forgive
hypocrisy,
but that the avatar does. So my question to you is, what is it about the avatar that takes on a personal side, or is touched, like we were talking about before? Or?
You see, hypocrisy is as absolute as the absolute presence. It's an absolute term. But hypocrites are tangible. And he, as the God-man, has come in order to make his love more tangible. All his attributes more tangible, his being more tangible to us, his love, his forgiveness, his charity, his compassion, everything becomes more tangible. So that's called the greatest spiritual dispensation. It's an hour of great spiritual dispensation when he's in our midst. You may call it an hour, or you may call it a period, a few minutes, maybe, although it may be a ministry of 30, 40 years or 3 years or whatever you call it. It's just a spiritual dispensation, our spiritual dispensation. So in that, he exercises his compassion on the hypocrites and forgives them.
I didn't mean to single out the hypocrites. What I was thinking of, I think what I'm trying to get at is that, you see, for me, all that I have to go by, I'm sure a lot of other people that I haven't met all that, is the stories, the films, the pictures, photographs of all. And just at least trying to think of Baba as much as one can.
Yeah.
It's kind of one-dimensional. I mean, being with Baba physically, interrelating, takes on a whole new dimension where there's a personal element where you're actually involved. So it's like, in a way, like for you, you've been with Baba for so many years, and you've had that residue now. I mean, you have that residue of the memories,
yes,
the personal touches that you have. So, like, what I'm saying is that what is there, that personal element seems to be still there from the childhood and from the story.
What is there for you to fall back on to get...
No, he was talking about Avatar forgets. God does not forget the past.
Oh, yeah, right.
Avatar does.
Yeah, it's because...
So, what, somehow, in my mind, this is purely individual thing, when I see a Baba now, my own perception right now is Baba as unmanifest God.
Yeah.
And... which is not the case as far as the avatar, which is he can be touched. And it's confusing in a way, because...
But when you talk of unmanifest God, when your Baba is God everywhere, what are you doing here? What brings you here?
I suppose to get the lingering perfume.
In fact, we who have experienced just the God-man's aspect, God and man, as avatar, we wonder. We have been wondering. We know that Baba has, as avatar, as personal, come and given you something. Even